flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome to the Detroit Football Network podcast. I am Justin Rogers, joined by Will Birchfield and Stoney. Season's over, gentlemen, and the story du jour is the Lions coaching staff is being pillaged. And they avoided it for a long time, probably longer than most of us expected. But 2 coordinators gone, a defensive line coach gone, potentially more on the way out. Maybe not a whole lot more, but more, you know, likely going to join Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn's staff. And I think we need to start there. You know, what do you think about the fits of where Detroit's 2 coordinators landed?
Well, I think Ben Johnson, Chicago, forgetting the division thing, you know, he took the best deal. He's got a great situation. You know, you could sit there and argue, say, well, Jacksonville, because of Trevor Lawrence, Ben Johnson could help him. But with an owner who didn't like the coaching search and then fired the general manager after, that's a whole shit show. So Chicago came out, you know, on top, and I really don't blame him. He's got a quarterback that I think has been falsely maligned. He played with a shitty offensive line. We saw here firsthand he can put up some pretty good numbers and some good results. He did it against the Lions. So I think Ben Johnson, I think it fits. As far as Aaron Glenn goes, you know, I'm not into the alma mater game in college. It's more so in college than in pros. But if anybody can put up with the New York media, who can give a shit about the New York media, and who can change a ridiculous organization, I think he's perfect for the Jets.
Stoney's already pushing. Yeah, he's already pushing our PG rating to R. We're going to get so many emails from those 2,200 listeners. I don't know how many are listening, but yeah.
I think sometimes it's closer to 22, but we can split the difference. I was surprised, genuinely, that Ben Johnson wound up in Chicago. I did not think he would stay in the division, and I was so wrong that he actually chose Chicago because they were in the division. I wasn't even sure he would leave at all. I thought, as we all said here on this podcast like 2 weeks ago, that if the Lions didn't get it done this year, he could possibly and maybe even likely return. But it was clear that he had resolved in his mind entering this season, it felt like, that this would be his last as a coordinator. I think he spent a lot of time last summer preparing himself emotionally, psychologically, and then like tactically in terms of putting together a potential staff to make the jump from OC to head coach. And I think that was a resolution in his mind for pretty much the whole season. And, you know, when we asked him about Caleb Williams ahead of the second Bears game, he spoke pretty glowingly about him. And maybe we should have put more stock into those words. And from all reports, he came into the Bears interview process the same way Campbell came into the Lions interview process, declaring that he wanted this job. And this was always his first choice among potential vacancies. And you know, I thought he was pretty honest at his introductory press conference on Wednesday in saying that, you know, he wasn't emotionally ready to leave here last year, hadn't even really even prepared himself for that possibility, which is part of the reason he returned. But he was and is now, and so we'll see what he can do in this division. I mean, he said himself, this is no small challenge. And I think, as he told Amon-Ra St. Brown, you got to beat the best to be the best. And that's certainly the challenge he's taken on in going to the last place team in the NFC North with three playoff teams to overcome. And then in Aaron Glenn going to New York, I know I had kind of pegged him all along as going to the Saints, but that seems like a great fit in returning to his roots, the team where he spent the first 8 years of his career and later served as a scout. And, you know, I'll echo Stoney. If anyone can instill a culture and an attitude of accountability and collaboration and toughness and tenacity into an organization the same way Dan Campbell did here, it feels like that's Aaron Glenn. They are the same leaders of men in the way that they both command respect and also distribute it, in the way that they can demand more from their players than maybe those players even think they can give. If I had to bet on one of those two now head coaches still being the head coach of their team in 4 years, I'd put my money on Aaron Glenn. What say you, J-Raj?
Well, I want to start with echoing what you said. You know, I was surprised Ben went to Chicago, and maybe less so because it was in the division, because, you know, this entire organization's bred on competition and, you know, not being afraid of competing against Dan Campbell or competing in the strongest division of football is not particularly surprising. You know, I think it boiled down to more their leadership situation, and I'm not there, you know, I'm not reporting on that team. I'm reading from afar, but I'm reading their reporters and, you know, some of the headbutting that seems to be going on with their GM and their president, Kevin Warren and Ryan Poles, did not match how Ben painted that situation in his press conference. You know, he talked about loving the leadership vision and everybody being on the same page. And I obviously you're going to say all the right things in a press conference, but you know, just it didn't strike me as the quote unquote right situation that Ben Johnson was reportedly looking for from national media sources that probably were in touch with his agent. So a little surprising there from a roster standpoint. Obviously the appeal is there with, I think Williams also maligned. I think he's going to be a really good pro. I think Johnson's going to, you know, start maximize that potential. They have obviously got good receivers, you know, need some work on their backfield and offensive line. Maybe you just missed DeAndre Swift. That's possible. Have we even considered that?
No.
Glenn's interesting. I know we all kind of pegged him for New Orleans for obvious reasons and mostly the jambalaya. but the Jets organization held an equally, if not greater, place in his heart, right? That's the team that drafted him in the first round. He played 8 years there. Not only that, when he decided to stay in football post-career, they gave him a job in their pro personnel department as a scout. That was before He made that transition into coaching. So, you know, it's an organization that's believed in him now three different times. And it was telling, I think, that he took that interview first when he had an opportunity for a second interview. So, in terms of thinking about where this thing is in 4 years, it's difficult. You know, it's,
you don't even know where their quarterback is going to be, because it certainly won't be the other Aaron
or his GM, right? Like, it's so much more fluid. But I have long believed that Glenn has the better temperament for being a head coach. He's a more organized individual. He's maybe got more of a clear, bigger picture vision. He was ready for this a while ago, whereas you talked about Ben Johnson really needing that extra time to get himself ready for this role. And smart decision by him. I mean, in hindsight, right? Why rush into something when you're not ready? You often only get one shot at these things. I think it was really, really smart for him to take a step back, come back another year, even though it surprised a lot of us, and really focus a summer on planning for this opportunity. It's always going to be good jobs available. There were a few good jobs available this year, and I absolutely could see him succeeding there. But I do wonder about his ability to ride some of the emotional waves of a rebuild as well as I think Aaron Glenn will.
Yeah, and one more note on Aaron Glenn. I always pegged him as sort of destined for New Orleans because I thought he would relish the challenge of restoring the Saints. Well, there's no bigger challenge than restoring the New York Jets. And if you succeed, you are a legend in this game. I mean, if Aaron Glenn goes to New York and does what really no coach has been able to do there in how many years, Tony? When is the last time that back-to-back conference championship run under Rex Ryan excluded, were the Jets a contender, a juggernaut in the NFL?
Well, juggernaut, no. I mean, Parcells had them they were pretty good here. I mean, he was, 29-10 as a head coach for the Jets in the late 90s. But, yeah, you go on and on. Bruce Coslet, Joe Walton, Lou Holtz.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, look, they haven't done any, they haven't won a Super Bowl since Joe Namath, which obviously it's still better than what we've done here as far as Super Bowls. But
yeah,
I mean, he's a guy, he could be a amazing hero in that, with that fan base, if he can turn this thing around.
Yeah, I think Aaron Glenn is someone who's cognizant of legacies. I think he wants to leave a significant imprint on this game. I'd argue he did so as a player, probably not to the degree, the winning degree that he had envisioned. He never won a Super Bowl, but he was a three-time Pro Bowl corner who played for 15 years. I think he wants to leave an even bigger impression as a head coach in this game, as someone who like changes the landscape of the NFL. And if you go into New York and you go into the Jets organization and you turn them into a relevant winning franchise that isn't just meaningful because of where they play and the media that covers them, you enter iconic status. I really believe that in the NFL. And I think that's something that, while it may be long, long down the line, matters to Aaron Glenn because he's a competitor and because he wants to, as he once said here, be the best coordinator the Lions have ever had. I guarantee you he wants to be the best head coach the Jets and heck the NFL has ever seen. And going to a place like New York, which has been on hard times, including the Giants now for almost a decade, is the best place to do that, in my opinion.
Well, you learned something, Stoney. You taught me that Lou Holtz was the original Nick Saban.
I don't know.
I did not realize. Well, he came from the college to the pros.
From NC State, if I'm not mistaken, to the Jets out of nowhere. Most people have never heard of Lou Holtz. I remember because I'm that old.
There is a great quote on Wikipedia about his. There's one paragraph dedicated to his Jets tenure, which is fantastic. And he resigned with the line, "God did not put Lou Holtz on this earth to coach in the pros." Wow. So legitimately a Nick Saban-esque departure from two decades earlier.
Didn't God put Aaron Glenn on this earth to coach in the pros? Hasn't that kind of always felt like his destiny? And I'm glad that he gets to realize it in a place where all the eyes will be on him and he won't be daunted by that, I believe, in any way.
He'll still be, I mean, look, it's not like some of the other teams in that area. But the Giants are still number one, as you know. But it's still it's the NFL, and the Jets still get a ton of ton of coverage, and you know a great fan base who have suffered. I mean, bags on their heads. I mean, you go on through the draft choices that they've made over the years, but whether it's Ken O'Brien or Kyle Brady, I mean, just ridiculous picks year after year after year. And it's going to be interesting, not to flip, go right to the GM, if they're going to go to the Lions well and go to Lance Newmark, who obviously had just 1 year with Washington and he beat the Lions. So I don't know. Can't beat him, join him, I guess.
I think that Lance Newmark thing might be dead, to be honest with you. But okay. I did just had another realization that the Jets and Mets, rhyming New York teams, are second fiddle in their town. So yeah, you got that for it.
I just learned who Ken O'Brien is. I'm pretty excited about that. I had no clue who Ken O'Brien was, but now I'm looking at his Pro Football Reference.
Oh, he was
pretty good.
Yeah, he wasn't bad, but it was nobody knew who he was. He was from Cal Davis, I think, and he, you know, that was the year where Marino and all those guys, Jim Kelly and Blackledge, you know, he was the fifth quarterback, and people went, he was picked over Dan Marino. You got to be freaking kidding me. And by the way,
no one knows who he was. Like, everyone knows who he is now.
well, by the way, JR, in your rhyming thing, you forgot to throw another one in there. The Nets are the second.
Oh, look at that. That's a very good theme.
Stick around. More of the Detroit Football Network podcast is next.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy two and get three free of equal or lesser value, plus CRV. Limit three free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit two packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit four items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so this is not the Jets Football Network podcast or the Bears Network. You know, the Lions need to replace these guys. That is priority one for this offseason. And honestly, it's really difficult to get out of the idea that they're going to fill those roles internally. And part of that is because that's how this organization operates. They reward guys that have been here. You see it with the roster. You see it with the coaching staff. You hear Dan Campbell say that he wants philosophical continuity and schematic continuity. Are you guys of the opinion that both these hires are coming internally, or do you think there's a, if there's an opportunity to go outside the organization, where, which side of the ball do you think that that gets filled?
I think that's a great question. I, you know, for me, it's like defensively, look, Kelvin Shepard's the guy. But, I mean, we have no idea. Does, you know, Aaron Glenn want him to be his DC in New York? And is that more appealing than for him to stay? That
Let
I
me
don't
say this.
Know.
So, I mean, if that choice came down to what it was, I think Shepard would stay here. And the reason I say that, that's a Dan Campbell guy.
Yeah.
That's a guy that Campbell put on Glenn's radar and said, hey, okay, I'm not going to make you hire him. You should interview him. I think you'd like him. And so that relationship started fresh in 2021, whereas Campbell goes back, obviously, much further to coaching Shepard way back in
right. So
2015,
that's,
2014, somewhere in there.
So that would be my only question, if he wants to stay here and if the Lions want him, I think that's the side of the ball that would stay here. Offensively, look, I don't know that much about, you know, Eggstrom. I mean, what he's done, you know, obviously he's part of this amazing offense, so that helps. It also a lot depends on Hank Fraley. Are they, you know, in order to keep him from going to Seattle, would they make him OC? I have no idea. There are some interesting names. There's a guy, and you say, oh, great, of course, he's with the Eagles, Kevin Petullio, who is their passing game coordinator. He's been around for a while. He's like a young guy at 41. I think he'd be a perfect, you know, fit because he knows what it's like to run an offense with a really good offensive line and, you know, a good running game. Now, the quarterbacks are obviously very different when it comes to mobility, but, you know, I think he's a name. On the other side of the ball, if we're going to, you know, spitball replacements, here's a question I have, and I don't know, JR, you would know this better than me. A former Lions assistant who's a defensive line coach, Chris Kachurik in San Francisco, he's been a defensive line coach for a while. I have no idea if he has any coordinator, you know, instincts. I have no idea if he fits in with Dan Campbell. I know that the players who played for him here, I don't think there's any of them here, obviously, they loved him. He was like a tough-ass guy. He would fit, at least he seemed to have the personality of Dan Campbell. And the other one, I think you or somebody else might have mentioned, and he's young, but he's a coach under Sean Payton right now, and that's Jim Leonard. There was a guy I thought would be really good for Michigan when Harbaugh left or whatever, before they promoted Sherrone Moore. There's a young guy. A guy who's played in the league, which we have seen is very important to this team, I think, and he's young. I think that's another guy to look at.
Well, Engstrand's interesting, just given the background, right? It's a guy that was attached to Harbaugh very early in his career, then came back and worked for him briefly at Michigan as an analyst. He's got coordinator experience. It's not professional. You know, he coordinated an offense at the college level. He coordinated a I guess it's professional and XFL offense with the DC Defenders, I believe. And so, you know, there's a good profile there. And you can also say the same for Scotty Montgomery, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's a guy that's been a head coach. He clearly is comfortable speaking a room. He's a great teacher and a leader. I can't, you know, vouch for either one of their play calling abilities. I don't know. I do think that something that maybe isn't being talked about enough is the possibility that Campbell ends up being a play caller with a coordinator, you know, and so the coordinator handles the organization of things, the implementation of the game plan, but ultimately it's the head coach that calls play. And I think there's, you know, very realistic possibility that Campbell wants that, you know, he talked about, you know, it being his specialty, his desire to be heavily involved in heavily involved on that side of the ball. And, you know, we saw a little bit of that early with him, you know, when they initially asked demoted Anthony Lynn there in the 2021 season. So, you know, I think that's something to watch. There's, you know, there's all kinds of coordinators out there. I do want to go to the defensive side, because I'm of the belief too that if it's going to be an internal hire, it'll be Shepard. I'm not entirely sure that he's ready, you know, and that's based on conversations with players last year. I didn't really get an updated sense talking to him this year, but you know, we've kind of pursued the Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn leaving stories before, and I spent some time talking to players about, you know, was Shep ready? And from a football acumen standpoint, absolutely. Guy understands the game. He plays the position, the middle linebacker position, that it's like the quarterback of the defense. He understands it all. He's coached the linebackers and the edge rushers here and had success in pulling career years out of guys. But Shep definitely has some hard edges in terms of personality. Like he doesn't dial it down particularly well. He's always on volume 11. That's a personality thing that is something that I think all coaches need to worry about and work on. I wonder if they feel like he might need a little bit more seasoning. I think he's long-term. He's definitely going to be a defensive coordinator in this league, and maybe more than that if that's successful. But I could see them saying, look, you've coached for 3 years. You've had some success. We're still not ready to pull the trigger there. There's some interesting veteran names tied to Dan Campbell's past, whether that's George Edwards, whether that's Dennis Allen, that carry appeal. I mentioned Jim Leonard in my coordinators to watch. I think that's a really interesting one as well, given the success he had at the college level year after year after year at Wisconsin. So if they do go outside the organization, my guess is defense would be the side of the ball that happens.
Well, as we speak, I don't know when you're out there listening to this, but Jeremy Fowler has just tweeted that the Tampa run game coordinator and defensive line coach Casey Rogers expected to join the Lions as a replacement for Terrell Williams. He's been with Todd Bowles since 2015.
I actually told John Neo, I don't know, 2 or 3 days ago, that I thought that would be a potential staff addition for Aaron Glenn. Those relationships go way back. It's not surprising that he's joining Campbell. I thought of him as a potential for Glenn as well.
So yeah, he's done a good job at Tampa. For their run defense has been pretty good, I would say.
So I'll jump in. I agree with you, J. Raj. I think if they go outside on either side of the ball, it's almost assuredly defense, mostly because it's critical that they maintain whatever continuity they can on offense in support of Jared Goff. And for all of the brilliance of Ben Johnson in terms of game planning and play calling, as paramount to Goff's revival here was their collaboration, like how consistently they met over the course of the week after practice to watch cut-ups, early in the morning to review yesterday's practice, to game plan for that week, in the off season to start envisioning what they wanted the overall offense to look that season. And there are guys on staff, Engstrand in particular, who I think have also been present in some of those meetings, in game planning, in season preparing, in reviewing practice. And I think Engstrand is their best bet to support Goff in the same way they have under Ben Johnson for the last three seasons. And it is hard to overstate Goff's rise in Detroit. Like, since Ben Johnson became OC, he leads the NFL in passing yards. Mahomes is second. Josh Allen is third. He leads the NFL in passing touchdowns. Mahomes is second. Joe Burrow is third. He's third in passer rating. And that's the biggest reason for the Lions' sustained success now for 2.5 years. They have to do everything they can to ensure that it's a mostly seamless transition for Jared Goff and this offense into next season. And I think hiring within is the best way to go about doing that. I think Montgomery certainly deserves a look here too. And I wouldn't be surprised next season to see basically two OCs call Montgomery the run game coordinator, Engstrand the passing game coordinator, and Dan Campbell serves, as you said, J. Raj, as the play caller. And then maybe if one of them shines in particular, you could name him sole OC end play caller, you know, the following season. I guess that would be 2026. On defense, I agree that Dennis Allen is the most intriguing external name. It feels like Dan Campbell could wind up battling Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn for Dennis Allen's defensive coordinator services, but obviously was the DC in New Orleans for the duration of Dan Campbell's and Aaron Glenn's time there, already reported as like the leading candidate to land the DC job in Chicago. I agree with you, J-Raj. I'm just not sure that Shep is 1,000% ready to step into a full-time DC job. And the idea of having two rookie coordinators on a team that is firmly in its Super Bowl window, as much as Brad Holmes dismisses the window term, would be a little bit concerning entering next season. I think you would want some form of veteran wisdom or leadership on one of those sides. So would not surprise me to see a more experienced import on defense and for the Lions to stick with the guys they have internally on offense.
Yeah, I'm curious, who are the two coordinators the Eagles hired in 2023 when they had to replace their double departure, because they're the last team to experience that.
Well, Brian Johnson was a failure at offensive line. The defensive coordinator, I forget off the top of my head.
You guys looked that up.
It was Sean Desai. Was he
right?
Was he a first time defensive coordinator? No, he had done it with the Bears briefly. I'm wondering if you know, because that certainly was a lesson learned for them, right? Like they went mm-hmm. with and you know, those guys did have some level of coordinating experience. It looks like defensive coordinator had a 1-year stint and their offensive coordinator had a couple college stints, but you know, look, what did they do when they replaced them? They went out and they got Kellen Moore, who, you know, had some success down in Dallas, and less success with the Chargers, but at least had extensive coordinating experience, and
Fangio,
maybe one of the better defensive coordinators in football in the last 30 years in Fangio, right? So, yeah. You know, there's maybe a lesson to be learned there, because that has got that franchise back on track after a little bit of dip.
Yeah, well, you guys mentioned the Eagles. I did want to bring up one name that's currently on their staff. Stoney, you're probably familiar with this name as someone who follows the Eagles, but Christian Parker is their passing game coordinator and DB's coach. And he spent 2023 under Sean Payton in Denver. And I think value the Sean Payton connection to Dan Campbell more than any other. And I also value how well that Eagles secondary has played this year. I mean, obviously it's littered with talent, but Christian Parker is one of those, you know, you see those lists of, you know, coaches to watch under 40. He is a rising young coach who has experience under Payton, who has obviously done a great job in his first year in Philly. And I don't know if he's cut out for a DC job, but I do wonder if he's someone Dan Campbell has his eyes on. Can he bring him in with a promotion that isn't all the way to DC? I think that's a name that's worth monitoring from Detroit's perspective this offseason.
Look, and their secondary with, you know, Mitchell and DeGene being, you know, rookies, Blankenship coming out of nowhere. Yeah. And you know, look, Slay's having a major comeback year.
Hall of Famer Darius Slay.
he's done a really good job.
I listed Parker in my lengthy list of candidates as well. I think, you know, you mentioned the Payton connection, and I think it goes to Fangio too. Fangio brought him to Denver. So, you know, that's recognition from a obviously what we talked about, a great, great coach. And then he brought him again to Philadelphia. So, you know, I've thought very highly of the work that he did with the secondary there, with Justin Simmons, with Patrick Surtain, number two, you know, and obviously that secondary has been kind of one of the few bright spots for them when they were going through their lows. And so he's done really good work. I believe the Eagles were number two in passer rating allowed to some team called the Lions in 2024. And maybe gave up the least amount of passing yards in football last year. So I don't know if Parker's the answer. I don't know if this is another case of taking a chance that's maybe a bridge too far, but yeah. The guy is clearly on the rise. And he touched Texas A&M, which we know does wonders for the networking with Dan Campbell.
Yeah. And then one more name to mention, and also a Texas guy, and that he went to Texas Tech. But amid rumors that Mark Brunell could possibly follow Aaron Glenn to New York, Davis Webb is another young rising coach in the NFL who just finished his first season as Broncos quarterbacks coach under, of course, Sean Payton. And we would have to believe played a pretty significant role in Bo Nix having a respectable rookie season there. And I think he's well regarded in NFL circles. Another name who pops up on some of those young coaches to watch lists. And if there's a vacancy in Detroit, I don't know, maybe Davis Webb is another quarterbacks coach to keep an eye on.
Well, good luck getting away from that job from Sean Payton. I mean, he did great work with Bo Nix. I don't think they're going to be eager to let him go, but
he would have to be a promotion, of course. But
is calling him a passing game coordinator, is that enough of a promotion from quarterback coach to allow that if it would happen? I don't know the answer to that.
I think it does. And I say that because I think that's how Aubrey Pleasant got here in 2021, as they slapped on the passing game coordinator title on the defensive side.
It's funny, if he didn't have that experience here, Aubrey Pleasant, he might be a guy on the list of up and coming guys.
You know? Yeah, I think it'd be awesome if he ends up with Ben. I mean, just to add to the storylines of that rivalry, to add to the, I guess the brewing rivalry with Lions and Bears fans. I mean, not that it wasn't always a rivalry, but, you know, certainly adds some extra juice to the whole thing.
Well, you go back to Ben Johnson for a second here. You talk about the rivalry. From what I was reading, and I heard Peter Schrager on Good Morning Football, the fact that Ben Johnson just brought up Matt LaFleur, and they are not, it's not like friends that they were, he was just like needling him or something. That's kind of ballsy. You know, it'd be one thing to say, I look forward to beating the Packers twice a year. Looking forward to beating Matt LaFleur twice a year. There maybe something there we don't know about.
They must have connected in a friendly way over the past few years, maybe just as young, bright offensive minds, because I can't believe that he would lob that in LaFleur's direction without a friendship.
Yeah,
some kind of fraternal relationship in place. That definitely caught me off guard and seemed to catch even some of the media members off guard who were covering that press conference. You hope that Ben doesn't rue those words one day.
Especially, I thought it struck me as pandering to the fan base. Like that's everything those fans want to hear.
Well, that's their biggest rival.
You can say the Packers, though, without saying Matt LaFleur. He made it quite personal.
Yes, he pandered.
Without potentially offending the other head coach.
I mean,
interesting choice, but hey, you do you.
He couldn't remember which hand was right and which one was left. So,
I guess it could have been worse. He could have said George Halas was better than Vince Lombardi. I don't know.
Brett Holmes talked for about half hour, and you know, maybe should touch on some of the milestone road marks here for the remainder of the offseason as the Lions enter that prematurely. We'll be right back on the Detroit Football Network podcast. All right, we're back on the Detroit Football Network podcast. I'm Justin Rogers with Will Birchfield and Stoney, and Brett Holmes talked this morning, and I think I could probably speak for the group and say he didn't say much of anything that we didn't expect. There was no earth-shattering or groundbreaking news today. What was your biggest takeaway from today, Will?
Yeah, there was no receipt cashing either to the collective media's dismay. It wasn't quite the performance that his end of season press conference was last year. Obviously, that was intentional. He was much more subdued this year. My biggest takeaway, I suppose, from the grand scheme is that they really felt like they just had a bad day at the worst possible time, and there's no reason to alter their course because of four quarters, or call it because of three turnovers by their mostly turnover proof quarterback last weekend. And I think that's the right course of action. I respect the fact that Brad Holmes basically, he doesn't bristle, but he avoids the term window. I think he views windows as limiting. I think when you put yourself into a Super Bowl window, that's when you're prone to making reckless decisions and going out and deciding that we have to supercharge this roster next year and this year to ever win a Super Bowl, and we'll do it at the expense of the future. He's never going to operate like that as long as he's GM here. And I thought he reiterated that today. This will always be a roster that is first and foremost bolstered in the draft, and they'll use trades and free agency to fill in the gaps. And I thought, you know, he also went out of his way to kind of remind everyone that they made some aggressive moves over the past year. Like, pledging faith in the draft, it isn't also at the same time ignoring free agency or ignoring external additions. I mean, they did spend draft capital in the past year on Za'Darius Smith and on Carlton Davis, two veterans they very much needed. They spent significant money last offseason on DJ Reader and you know, a decent chunk of the salary cap on Kevin Zeitler. They're going to make similar moves this offseason. I think where the Lions' future is determined moving forward is whether or not Brad Holmes can have a draft class this year that looks more like his draft classes in 23, 22, and even 2021. That is a draft class that yields immediate dividends. That to me was the biggest setback for the Lions this year. Outside of all the obvious injuries, they did not get immediate contributions from their rookie class the way they did in 23. Laporta, Branch, Gibbs, Jack Campbell in 2022, Hutchinson, Kirby Joseph, heck, even James Houston that year, and obviously in 2021, Sewell, St. Brown, down the stretch, Liam McNeil. Terrion Arnold played fine this year. He played a lot. He ended up playing in 17 games. I don't think he ever produced a signature moment, which is a little bit discouraging when you consider how often he was a pivotal piece of the Lions' game plan every single week. And aside from Arnold, the only other rookie who really made an impact, and that was in two games, was Christian Mahogany. And yeah, in a year where they needed so many replacement players in the face of all these injuries, there just wasn't the immediate impact from Holmes' draft class as there was in years past. So we'll see if that changes next season, but the larger plan remains the same, and I think it's the right plan.
Well, you know, looking back at the draft, so the aggressive move to trade up for Terrion Arnold, aggressive move, find out if it's right or not to trade up, you know, to get Giovanni Manu, which goes back to a year where he was aggressive to move up for Broderick Martin, which in all indications looks like a complete bust. But I'll give him one more year if he even makes the team. But the thing that I took away also, and it was partly not because it was my question, but when I asked him about the offensive line and pass rushing, he kind of, in that answer, didn't really address the offensive line. But it was the first time anybody really said the obvious, and that was talking about the injuries. Because usually it was just, oh, you know, we can't worry, next man up, next man up, next man up. And obviously, it was a factor. It's not an excuse. It was a major factor. And he actually alluded to the fact that, you know, especially where am I going to get, you know, I had to use my a sixth defensive rusher. You know, that doesn't happen. So yeah, that's what I took out of it as well.
Yeah, you look back at the draft and you see it felt kind of weird strategically from the first place, but the roster was so deep and so talented in so many spots that you could get a little weird. Going back to back with corners was a little weird. Going and taking a safety to convert them to running back was a little weird. Drafting a offensive tackle that you knew was going to take a year, maybe two, to develop was a little weird, but it is unfortunate that those guys couldn't contribute, and maybe Rakestraw would have contributed more if he wasn't part of that injury bug biting, right? I mean, he was set to start in week two. It's something we discussed on this podcast months ago, and something he finally confirmed in the locker room to during exit interview day, but I'm curious, Will, where you even think that, you know, you can could have found rookie contributions this year, and maybe if you would have guessed right and you had a defensive tackle earlier, then yeah, you would have lucked into contributions. But I just don't think they had a whole lot of place for it. And I'm, you know, kind of a similar thinking next year. Like, where's the places you think they can find rookie contributions beyond the first round without, I guess, maybe running into one? You know, maybe defensive end two, right? Like there's some room there on the rotation. Probably defensive tackle again with Levi maybe being outside of their price range to retain, and you know, some of their depth, and Martin not yet reaching the point where they feel comfortable having him contribute. I just don't know where they're gonna get you know, first year contributions positionally. You know, in many spots.
Yeah, I mean, it depends, like you said, on who's backed. It's not like they're going to re-sign all of their starting free agents, and there are a good bit of them, especially on defense. I mean, obviously, Onzerike stands out. Derek Barnes stands out. Melifonwu stands out. I don't really know how in good conscience you can re-sign Melifonwu just because you can't rely on him to be healthy for more than a few games at a time.
Right.
On offense, obviously, Tim Patrick stands out. Kevin Zeitler stands out. To answer your question, you know, they went into this season with a rising star at one defensive end spot in Hutchinson and a major injury liability at the other spot in Marcus Davenport. And you could argue that they didn't do enough in the draft to protect themselves against the possibility of Davenport missing time. And I think it would have been, honestly, much more surprising, and this is no shot at Davenport, to see him play 14, 15 games than it was to see him only play two. I think the Lions could have done more to prepare themselves for that possibility. And when you go through a draft, especially in this day and age, and really don't draft a pass rusher, an edge rusher, I mean, the closest thing they did was Mekhi Wingo, who is kind of more of a tweener. I don't think you would
situational at best
solely as a pass rusher. I think you opened yourselves to the possibility of what Brad Holmes alluded to, Stoney, in being down to your sixth or seventh or eighth pass rusher, and maybe they could have swung earlier or at all at that position, and maybe they do this year in the draft. I think, you know, in the same way that some teams think you should always draft a quarterback in every other draft just to have a potential contingency plan in place, I think the Lions, and I know they'll trust their board, they won't reach, but the Lions should certainly prioritize defensive end, edge rusher, OLB, whatever you want to call it in this year's draft. Because Derek Barnes is another guy who might be crunched, might be salary crunched out of the picture. I mean, the way they talk about Kirby Joseph, are obviously going to try and re-sign him or get him an extension this offseason. Brian Branch will come up after him. You know, you have to re-sign these guys eventually at the expense of others. And if Derek Barnes and Marcus Davenport are both possibly out of the picture next season, those were your two most reliable or proven edge rushers opposite Hutch. And that position, again, becomes one of pretty glaring need entering 2025.
You know, you mentioned the draft, and, you know, how we always joke about my app, or, you know, Detroit team should have picked this guy, whatever. But, you know, you can sit there and who knows, the fact that they traded up to get Arnold, you know, when they didn't have to trade up, and they could have got Sanistrol right there. Okay, yeah. So there's one. The other thing that is – this trend, and I probably should have, or somebody should have asked them today, maybe before the draft, you ask them, this drafting players who are coming off injuries and free agency as well. I mean, between Pascal, Davenport, even DJ Reader to a certain extent, they've gotten a lot of, you know, they made a lot of acquisitions one way or the other on questionable guys, their health backgrounds. And maybe that keeps the prices down, JR. I don't know, but maybe that needs to be looked at as well.
Yeah, and I also think in football, like, it's kind of limited, right? Like, what constitutes injury history and what doesn't? You know, is it a torn ACL, or is it a guy that missed six games with a hamstring? I just think the game of the game itself brings injury. I mean, it's just it's pretty common. It's unusual to find a guy, particularly in free agency when they've been in the league for a few years, that just doesn't have injury history. It's
right.
part of the game. And yeah, you'd like to find more Kevin Zeitlers of the world that have missed like four games in 10 years, but even he missed games. Like it's not something you can.
Yeah, he missed the most important game of the season.
Right. So it's tough to predict. I do want to go back to the windows discussion. I think Will characterized it well in saying that it's a limiting conversation, but I think some of the contract situations the Lions have, you know, decisions they've made that I don't think we disagree with. Re-signing Goff, re-signing St. Brown, re-signing Sewell, signing McNeil, like these are almost obvious decisions, but those four combined, guys, $160 million in cap hits in 2026. And
look, there's tough.
there's ways to move that money around, but that's when you get into the era of kicking the can down the road. And so I am not of the opinion that their window closes in 2025. I think that's silly, but I think next year, you know, offers maybe the best and last great opportunity to kind of load up for one-time things, right? To bring in a one-year rental to go out and get something. And so, you know, I think that's going to be a really interesting approach this offseason, because I do not think you should sacrifice your strategy of building through the draft. It's obviously going to be really important. You're going to need young talent to supplement these big money pieces you have to sustain the success long term. But there is a case to be made to taking a swing in 2025 a little bit more aggressively, with maybe using some of those draft assets to get a veteran, because you do have some cap space to play with this year.
Now, how much do we, you know, talk about 2026, how much do we anticipate the cap going up? So maybe they won't get killed that much, but you know, you still have, you know,
still might be half your cap there. Right, Stoney.
Well, yeah, because you still have Hutch, Branch, Joseph, if you want to bring those three back.
Laporta. Gibbs.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think we're all, I mean, it's for another day. I don't anticipate them extending J-Mo. Do you?
I would lean yes. Yeah, I mean, it's not
lean yes too.
That's not 100% thing for me, all but right. I think there is a love of Jameson Williams in this building, and an understanding too that he was going to go through some of these lumps. And you know, the strikes aren't infinite, but I've said this many times before, maturity issues with him are not malicious in intent. It's a lot of stupid.
I'm just talking about the finances. I have nothing to do with him as a player.
I mean,
if you're going to spend a lot of money to extend him, you should at least be a Pro Bowl player. And I don't know if he's a Pro Bowl player under this offense.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. He might be a Pro Bowl player, because I think fans, not just in Detroit, but outside of the city, love him. And I think a lot of players in the league love him. I think he's just got kind of that swag that, you know, just resonates with everyone.
Yeah, the dilemma with J-Mo, since Stoney brought it up, to me is that he might be seeking wide receiver one money, and on this team he'll never be more than wide receiver two as long as Amon-Ra St. Brown is here. And if he's of the belief, and his agent is of the belief, that they can go out there and get him paid like wide receiver one by another team who's in need of a player like that, then you got to let him go. Because what you cannot do is pay him more than he's worth to you. And to you, at most, at best, and I think he's a splendid player, J-Mo is your second best receiver. So that's possibly where he gets priced out of the Lions' long-term plans. Want to play a quick game with you guys and put you in some impossible predicaments here. Just gut instinct, first reaction, do the Lions re-sign or let these players walk? Don't think about it. Just tell me the answer that comes to mind. This is for just this offseason. J-Rod, you go first. Levi Onwuzurike.
Gone.
Stoney?
He gone.
Derek Barnes?
He gone.
I think he stays. I think the discount will be there from the injury. He doesn't have a lot of playmaking stats. I think there's either a lower multi-year deal and possibly even a one-year prove-it deal cost that can allow them to keep Derek for another year at least.
Now, if Ati Melifonwu will.
So gone.
Stunning. See ya.
I mean, I put him at 25%, but yeah. Look, you can read through the tea leaves on these things, and he often irked his coaches with his availability. And I don't think it was any fault of his own, but I just don't think they can handle the inconsistency of his durability any longer.
Carlton Davis.
Man, wow. I wish they could find the money, but I have a really hard time seeing how they do. And so, you know, I think Davis is going to command more than $15 million, probably closer to $18 million per season, and that's fine for 2025. But I don't know where that fits beyond that. So I'm gonna bid farewell to Carlton Davis as well.
So basically, they traded Carlton Davis and Aaron Glenn for two number threes, right?
Yeah. So you think he's gone too, Stone?
Yeah, I do. I just don't. I think they want him. I just don't think they can afford him.
Marcus Davenport.
That's in the Melifonwu camp. I think you got to move on.
Got to, yep. Right?
Agree.
Kevin Zeitler.
If he wants to stay at a similar or not crazy price, I think he stays. But so I'm going to say yes.
Oh, we found one that Stoney's keeping. All right. I'm going to say gone, and I'm going to say that strictly from the perspective of Mahogany. I think they
feel really comfortable. Who went to college where?
At Boston College, but I have Mahogany can play the other side. Get rid of Glasgow.
Well, yeah, you don't save enough on because you signed Glasgow to 3 years. The savings is minimal. You're going to pay $6 million for him to go away, $8 million to keep him. You know, at that point, it's a strictly a performance decision. I think you could absolutely make the case. You know, if you want to go that 1 year flip, and like I said, you got the money to do it in 2025, then do it. But you're going to pay him $5 or $6 million to go away, and Zeitler $6 million. So now it's an $11 million decision to keep Zeitler.
Yeah, and to in theory limit the growth of Mahogany, and like that's what you're also doing if you bring Zeitler back. All right, last one. And by the way, these are all guys who have been starters at some point this season, just to give you a sense of the decisions the Lions are facing this offseason. Tim Patrick.
That is the one I put a 50-50 odds on.
Yeah.
In my little preview yesterday. I will go yes. I'll round up on the 50-50, but he's of the age that it's time to draft the long-term answer at number three, and possibly the long-term answer at number two if the JMO question is lingering in any way with Brad Holmes.
I think they keep him because I don't think the offers for him are going to be that prohibitive. I don't think it's going to cost them that much. Personal.
No, $2 or $3 million probably at the most.
Yeah,
and he's right. Not getting more than a 1 year deal.
Right. So you keep him for one more year and see what happens. All right. Another thing that he
we're gonna do Dan Skipper, no.
Oh, hey, Dan Skipper, that's a yes. Come on.
100%.
That's a lock.
Yeah, J Rodge needs somebody to go take a cold plunge with.
Yeah.
The Hendon Hooker situation, forgetting about, he should be the starter. No, none of that crap. Has he done enough in their eyes, do you think, that they don't need to even think about another quarterback?
I mean, obviously not. They, you know, I mean, I hate to be blunt, but I mean, they signed Teddy Bridgewater.
I know.
Coaching high school football a month ago, and he was the guy who they turned to in a playoff game. So, no. I mean, if they didn't trust Hendon Hooker in that spot after two full years in their system, only one of which was actually spent on the field practicing, I don't know why they would trust him going into next season. So that, you know, more and more, that looks like a really unnecessary swing and called a whiff, if you want, in the draft by Brad Holmes. I think the one thing worth remembering with the Hooker pick was that they weren't sold themselves yet on Jared Goff when they made that selection. That was in after the 2022 season, correct? So Jared was into his emergence under Ben Johnson. So, and they were, and the Lions were still, you know, a full year and change away from extending Jared Goff. So, you know, they viewed Hooker potentially as a successor at that point. But yeah, I think that ship has obviously sailed. And even the idea of him being a reliable QB2
I know.
Is looking less and less likely.
I found an area where we're going to disagree, and that's probably healthy. I read the Bridgewater situation as the plan all along. I think it was discussed possibly as early as when he decided to step away, certainly during the offseason. I look at it almost like insurance for cars, right? You got a beater, you get the crash and cry insurance that you don't worry about. And that's what the regular season is. If Hendon Hooker's got to step in a regular season game, you're good enough. You know you're good enough to win your division. Well, maybe not 14-2, but you know, get by for a game. But then the playoffs are the luxury sports car that's on a loan, and you need premium insurance. And there is something to be said about the difference between Teddy Bridgewater, who's played whatever 70, 80 starts in the NFL, versus essentially a rookie who has only played garbage time. You have to protect the investment of a Super Bowl run in the postseason. And I think it is I understand the optics of it. I think it's an okay decision for an organization that wanted to protect something special. And obviously it didn't work out the way it envisioned, but in some ways it did, because Bridgewater came in that game where you don't really expect a backup to come in and led a touchdown drive. And I get it. He led a touchdown drive where Jameson Williams had a 61-yard reverse. Doesn't matter.
He did complete one pass.
He completed a pass for a first down, right? Like, he did what he needed to do. He managed it. Who's to say that Hendon Hooker in that moment, you know, it feeling the crush of pressure, doesn't make that throw, or that throw is tipped, or it's intercepted. We, you know, there's nothing to say that does happen, but I understand the Lions thinking. I don't think anything has changed with Hendon Hooker's future. I think he was drafted to be a number two. I don't think he was drafted as a potential replacement for Goff. I thought he was brought in as a high ceiling, cheap backup, because you need to cut costs somewhere. When your quarterback's about to have a $70 million cap hit, you can't afford to spend $8 or $10 million on another backup somewhere else. And so I think Hooker continues to be your long-term backup. I don't think that there's a tremendous amount of concern, and I don't see them making this call next year. I think he needed that extra year of seasoning. I think he needs an extra camp, an extra preseason. He improved a ton during this preseason, but he was rough during the early stages of the offseason, during the early stages of the training camp. And, you know, it wasn't until maybe that second or third preseason game where you started going, okay, the switch is flipping a little bit. I think he needs another year of seasoning, and, you know, they'll trust him more to be that insurance policy when it matters most.
And plus, Hendon Hooker is a friend of the program, so I will defer to your opinion on Hendon Hooker. I think the best image of Teddy Bridgewater's playoff cameo, and Jay Raj, you and I were joking about this during the game, is his players who are at home watching that game, having their very own Leo DiCaprio moment, feet propped up, watching TV, and then snapping, "Oh my God, there he is! I know that guy! He was my coach for the past 4 months. Now he's on national TV in primetime, leading the drive for the Lions in a playoff game." What a thrill that must have been for those kids at home watching. That's coach!
And I dismissed it with the JMO reverse, but I'm pretty sure Teddy was out there throwing a block on that.
A couple, although I don't think he really wanted to throw the second one. It looked like he was mostly dodging the second block.
Got in the way.
Threw the first one.
Yeah, so obviously JR just wants the Lions to keep the cheap Hooker, and this, as opposed to go getting a high class, you know, call girl.
Just to make that joke.
No, we're gonna get like adult. You didn't need adult approval to listen to this podcast.
Do you think Legends in downtown Detroit will sponsor our podcast?
The Bazooki. We'll do a live show from there.
Can't bring you guys anywhere.
One other thing. Can we hope or pray or whatever words you want to use? We did see a slight regression. We talked about Glasgow. He didn't really get – he went downhill. Taylor Decker, the last few games of the season, he did not play as well. And granted, it's a lot of it's injury. I know he wants to come back, but this wasn't the same Frank Ragnow the last, I don't know, two, three months of this season.
I don't know if I agree with that take at all.
Okay.
Well, I mean,
maybe on Ragnow,
Glasgow Decker. For sure. Decker. Decker was a little bit more inconsistent than you'd like. I thought he was fine in the playoffs.
Okay, Ragnow,
great down the stretch.
I mean, Ragnow was the second team all pro. I mean, he had two really bad games, and maybe that's, you know, what's sticking out. Vita Vea will do that to you. Ed Oliver will do that to you. You'll have some rough days, and you hate to see it from your best players, but I thought for 15 and 16, if you want to include the playoff game, Ragnow was as good as ever, and he's 28 years old. I mean, I don't see any urgency there, but who knows? Brad Holmes has said he's going to address that offensive line come hell or high water every single offseason, because that's the strength and it'll remain the strength for him.
What does the University of British Columbia's offensive line look like this year?
I don't know. Has Boston College got anybody there, Will?
Hey, that's the offensive line factory, baby. All you got to do is take a driver to Chestnut Hill.
Yeah.
We're churning them out like it's an assembly line.
Oh, and they all end up here in Detroit, from Damian Woody down to Christian Mahan.
Probably the best, one of the best guards in the league, Lindstrom, right? Over, is he still in Atlanta? Boston College.
I think so.
Another all pro, I'm pretty sure.
Falcons Football Network podcast.
All right, what else we got? We got anything? I know producer Zach's got a hard out at 3 p.m. and we're coming up on it, gents.
No, I think I've spoken my mind, said my piece.
You can edit the Ragnow stuff out if you want.
That's pretty stupid. I was
keep the strip club stuff, but edit the Ragnow stuff.
Yeah,
great, perfect.
That was bad.
I was struck at Holmes. Commitment to getting Kirby Joseph re-signed. Not that I thought there was any doubt coming off the season he had, but entering this year, it felt like at some point they were going to have to choose between Joseph and Branch. Like, can you pay two safeties likely top of the market money? Well, they feel very poised to do that. He made it pretty clear. You know, he's another one of those guys, Kirby is, who has proven to be a Detroit Lion, and you know, more tangibly said that it's just really hard to find in the NFL ball hawks who can tackle the way he can. And I'd argue you can even lop off the second part of that sentence. It's just really hard to find ball hawks. I mean, you got a guy who's going to produce darn near double-digit interceptions, even if it's not quite to that level moving forward. In a league where turnovers decide most games, I think you pay Joseph whatever it takes to keep him, and then you figure out Brian Branch when the time comes. But Holmes was pretty matter of fact about the fact that they will look into and hopefully get Joseph extended this offseason. Did you feel the same way, J-Raj?
I did. I'm not surprised. Like you said, Holmes has made it clear, and he reiterated with the same sentiment he's used many times, that you do what you can to keep your good players. And, you know, Kirby Joseph clearly is among the best, most consistent producers on this roster, and took a massive, massive step forward this year. Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about the interceptions. Well, a lot of that was way less risk reward taken. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just didn't have the stupid plays that you had to live with for the picks this year. They weren't there. And then the tackling, I mean, just massive, massive improvements, and credit to defensive assistant Jim O'Neill for, I think, the work and the emphasis that he did there. Obviously, Joseph put in the work and accepted that coaching and put in the effort himself, but the Lions prioritized it this year, and he delivered. It's fascinating. Look at this roster. You know, I don't know how they get all these deals done, and, you know, maybe it's the idea that some of the deals come off the books here at some point, and they're replaced, the Deckers, the Montgomerys of the world, DJ Reader, Anzalone, you know, is going to be a really interesting discussion in a year.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've got to find money, presumably, for Branch, for Joseph. I mean, we're going through the list that we already did, but Jack Campbell probably at some point feels like a guy that they want to build around.
Yep.
Hutchinson is going to get $1 billion approximately. You know, Gibbs, there's no way that they let Gibbs get away from them. Laporta, like, I just, the cap management is going to be really, really fascinating. And obviously Brad Holmes is the GM, but they pay some really talented cap guys in Dizner and Charlie Atkins, formerly Brandon Sosna, to work their magic. And they are going to be working magic overtime, it feels like, for the next 2-3 years.
good problem to have, right?
Yeah. You'd rather have too many good players. It's like the same thing. Mm-hmm. People are so pissed off about, you know, Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn. Be happy. I mean, I believe, yeah, right? Didn't I read correctly from you or one of the expert writers like you guys are, that this is the first time a coordinator has left to be a head coach from the Lions since Don Shula? Is that correct?
That is officially correct. There's a weird situation there with Dick Geron and right, interim head coach and whatnot, but it's 62 years since like a direct direct poaching.
That's insane.
That Shula guy, what happened with him?
Yeah, this is what happens when you, if you want good teams, you have to, you know, there are some detriments to being a good team. That's it.
Can't wait to eat at Aaron Glenn Steakhouse in 25 years. All right.
That's a good one. That would be jambalaya joint is what it would be.
Get a Sazerac and some jambalaya. It's pretty good. Pretty good living. As always, episode produced by Zach Clark. You can get the podcast at Odyssey, Spotify, Apple Music, all the places you get it. Please download, like, subscribe. I don't know when we'll be back, but we'll be back. We'll have some off-season podcasts here and there.
We got the combine.
We got the combine. Draft preview.
We have the owners' meetings.
Stoney's got it all scheduled out. So. Just let us know the dates and times. We'll be
hirings. We have to talk about the when they hire guys. I mean,
Emergency pods, I believe the kids call those.
Yes, exactly.
You can find Will's work at 971theticket.com. You can find Stoney filling in for any variety of shows at 971.
Wherever.
Probably got 2 to 3 time slots the rest of the afternoon.
No, wish.
And my work is at the Detroit Football Network at detroitfootball.net. Been really fun first season with the podcast, with the website. Appreciate everybody that has read, subscribed, listened. We are really, really grateful. We don't get to do this without fans. And so for Stoney, for Will, I'm Justin.
Thanks Zach.
Peace.
And Zach.